Volume off.
Hey.
Hey, everybody.
We are...
Welcome to... Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the same thing you were, but you sounded better saying it, so you should do it.
Welcome to episode 21, the episode where we answer some questions from Pure Blind.
Yeah.
I mean Ivan.
Yeah, and by questions, I think we just mean like question.
Question?
So, but it is a question. It's a legitimate user request. So I hope he feels satisfied. We do offer a money-back guarantee. So, you know, it's perfectly without risk to call in with a question.
Mm-hmm.
And by call, we mean like post. Like, don't call my phone.
If you found my phone, I would be very surprised.
Yeah. Well, for one, I like never answer my calls anyway. So, like, it's literally the worst way you could get a hold of me. But also, like, that would be kind of weird.
Oh, I have a tangent. Mm. I got a call that said likely spam. So I'm like, oh, yeah. So I hit my screen call, and then Google does like a little blurb and makes them answer some questions. And they just hung up and they dialed again. So it came up again, likely spam. I'm like, all right. So I just hit the thing again. And then they texted me and they said, hello, David. I was like, your call came up a spam. Like, oh, don't worry. You're in really good hands. Like, well, that doesn't answer anything. They
didn't just that's you very reassuring.
Hey, you're creepy spam. Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, I sometimes get the ones where it's like a very accented guy saying he's from Microsoft tech support. And it's like, okay, I have not owned a Microsoft product in like literal 20 years. That ain't a thing. So I don't know what you're going to do for me. So, but I'm sure they just want to like steal your shit.
Well, yeah.
That's what it's all about. But yeah, we were going to tackle a fan request, user request. I don't know. Fan seemed like we're presuming a lot of the relationship. A gentleman. Person.
An enthusiast request.
Yeah. Recipient. Well, he was enthusiastic enough to ask the request. So that's like a degree of involvement, right?
It was even a direct message.
Oh, okay. So that's like the most personal. That's usually only for like dirty pictures and like blackmail threats. So that's that's a level of parasocial connection where we've achieved. So if you want to introduce our question, I guess, or paraphrase it or reference it.
I will look at the question again. Let's see. First of all, asked if we're open to topic suggestions. The answer is yes. Show's over. There we go.
Yep. We're always open. It's a good thing we got this out of the way. I felt we went through a lot of important, interesting points, perhaps a little controversial at times, but you know, we're not afraid of saying it like it is.
Yeah. If we get banned from YouTube, and well, this is the reason why.
Yes.
All right. So he had a follow-up question, though. Sassy lad.
Yeah.
He said he wouldn't mind a recap of Ivan's older games, a quick summary, and maybe some insights on the development of said game, with some tips on developing games as a bonus round.
And totally would. I think that might be something we sort of come back to. Because if you followed NWG for a while, you know there's a lot. There's a lot to talk about. And we all kind of represent like different moods and vibes. So, yeah. I guess I don't want to do the whole like recapping how I got into wargaming. Or design, because people can find that somewhere. And if you can't find it, then maybe you, I don't know. That's for a different time. But we can start sort of at the beginning as far as like, because like everyone, if you have like any kind of creative input, I think everyone has like sat around and like cooked up a little game for themselves. Maybe even when you were kids, like you have some Lego dudes and you can move one tile on the carpet and you roll a die or something.
Playing four ups.
Yeah, you know, you come up with your own stuff. The start of this is actually predating Norweasel games, but it's like the start of what becomes like game design that is not only intended to be played by people other than like my hapless friends that I could browbeat into it, but which actually like found an audience. That's which is Fast and Dirty. Actually, I totally spaced this when I took my notes. I'm freelancing this part,
cool.
Freestyling. Fast and Dirty was a sci-fi skirmish game. It was distributed for free online, but it actually attracted like a bit of an audience. For a while, it seemed like it kind of coincided with like the explosion of 15mm sci-fi. And for a while, it felt like when people were talking about 15mm sci-fi, that was one of the games that would come up sort of unprompted from people that I didn't pay to say it. Alongside, well, not alongside very much, actually. Stargrunt, mostly. I think...
Grunts, too?
Grunts was nowhere around yet. Okay. Like, we're earlier than that, actually. Like, chain reaction was the brand new thing that people were talking about. Is the time... I think, like, Defiant's Vital Ground was being talked about, which I don't even know if that ever became a thing. So we're talking, like, pretty early. 15mm was basically, like, Ground Zero games, and that was kind of it. And then a bunch of stuff started, like, popping up when everyone started making it, right? Like, Rebel Minis come around at that time and stuff. And Fast and Dirty was kind of this... I've talked before about sometimes you start with like a vibe or an idea. Like a vibe might be that you want to make a game that's like heroic science fiction or something. That was like the idea for Mystic Space. Or it's a specific thing you want to cover. Like you want to do rules for like air war in Korea or something. So then you have like a very specific thing. But in this case, it was basically like coming from a couple of mechanical ideas. So that's like the third way you can kind of start. We have like a... And that can be riskier because if you're very set on a certain kind of mechanic, that will start like locking you into certain decisions really quickly. Like if you want to have like a dice range that's very narrow, then maybe you can't do like a huge variety. You can't do like superheroes and regular soldiers in the same game probably. And with Fast and Dirty, it was kind of like a couple of different things. I had played some historical game where combat was like for a whole unit at a time. So you just roll once. And I thought that was really cool because I'd never seen that before. Like you could have like eight guys and you just roll one die, right? But I didn't want it to be like a table lookup because I was still kind of a little stuffy. And I remember like playing the game and then multiple times rolling. It was on a D10, I think, and rolling like a one or a two. And it bothered me that like the entire unit would just shoot like shit because you had, when you only make one die roll, it's as likely to be a perfect roll as it is to be a terrible roll, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I got the idea that, oh, what if you roll two dice and pick the highest? Then you're going to get, like, it's still, like, a 1-6 range if it's D6s, but now you're kind of, like, you're going to get more results in that, like, 4-5 range. And I messed around with the dice a little bit, and that ended up, like, fitting really well and just, like, feeling like, oh, okay. So that was, so kind of the core of the entire game kind of came out of just, like, that dice mechanic. The second thing that was on the like very original notes, which are now like long lost, was that I was, at the time I played Stargrunt, and the idea of suppression was like really big in my head. I was like, oh, this is like a real war game, right? As opposed to all the silly games with toy soldiers. This is for real men. Real men. But the fact that it was like a thing that you like kind of had to roll for, if you've never played Stargrunt, it's just a function of like how well you roll on the squad hit roll. So you can be shot at and not get suppressed. But it was also like suppression was very like you were either suppressed and couldn't do a thing or you were not suppressed. And you just act normally. And I thought, well, that I don't know that that's necessarily like how things work when you read like books and stuff. Like a lot of times it's that, you know, some dudes are like moving through like a city in like Vietnam or something and somebody shoots at them and they all like hit the dirt, but they're not like paralyzed. Like they immediately start like trying to find the target or shooting back or finding cover, or, you know, like they're doing stuff, but they're not standing around. So the thought I had was like, what if suppression is automatic? Like if you get shot at, you hit the dirt, but it's like a more moderate level of penalty. You can still shoot back, but not as well. You can move around, but you're more restricted. And that became the core of what became the under fire mechanics. It's just kind of how it worked. So with Fast and Dirty, it was basically based around like some mechanical ideas that I really want to see in a game, which kind of wasn't much of a thing. There were other things in there that were more like obviously derivative. Like there were, you had to contend with like wounded soldiers and recover them because that was the thing in Stargrunt. And I thought that was really cool. Again, that was like a real wargaming kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there was some other stuff that was like inspired by things that I just thought were cool. But that was a case of having some mechanical. And then it fit into a being kind of a military sci-fi game because, again, that's just what I was into at the time. You know, we had gone from 40K to Warzone. And then into Stargrunt. So that was kind of like the vibe I was after. I knew I wanted to. And a lot of people at the time kind of commented that, oh, okay, this feels like a reimagining of Stargrunt, but like slimmed are a little more like streamlined.
Oh yeah.
So, which is fine. Like, and that was kind of what like caught on. Like, I remember I found some random dude. This may even have predated DeviantArt. I don't know how far that goes back, but I found some random weirdo on the internet who drew a bunch of drawings that went into the game. So for a while, it was actually like one of the few like indie games that had like illustrations. They're all like pencil drawings, but they had like a very cool vibe. They're all lost now, unfortunately. I don't know what happened to the guy. But it was one of those cool like indie moments where like one dude is typing out a game, another dude has art on like his GeoCities website or whatever. And, you know, then it's just a thing. And over the years, later on, once like people started getting into it, I started getting suggestions and stuff. And a guy offered to help like lay out the game nicely, which is a skill that I have never had and still kind of don't. So he helped out. So we got two versions actually of like a very sort of professionally looking. If you've downloaded Fast and Dirty online, odds are this is the version you've had, if it didn't look like complete garbo. So that was, and we went through and like updated a bunch of the rules and cleaned it up and stuff going into those two versions.
But lost the artwork.
Yeah, well, actually, I lost that artwork as well. For that, for the so-called third edition, which is the first that was like laid out and looked nice, at the time, we didn't really know what to do. So we ended up just getting photos of like normal, like real life soldiers and stuff and putting like Photoshop filters on them.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen that one.
Yeah. That's like the first a lot of people have seen if you didn't have the super indie one. And then for the fourth version, a bunch of people in the community contributed artwork into it. So if you've seen the one that has real sci-fi art, that one, that was all community art the fans made, which actually like in hindsight, because that's hard to do. You got to get people who are like really invested in it. And it's, I feel like it's more difficult nowadays in a roundabout way. So it was kind of a special thing, like thinking back on it. So yeah, that was kind of the trajectory of Fast and Dirty. Now, that was all done with the intention of being a free game. It was just a game that you could download. And so many people had like contributed to it, especially when people did the art, because then you can't like go charge for it. You know. So, and in the end, I kind of ended up like somehow having done everything I wanted to do with it. So some British dude offered me a bit to buy the rights for it, to the name and stuff. So he has a website. You can go check it out. They put some effort into it. I keep kicking around, like reviving it on like a slightly different version. But from Draft. The...
Yeah. Fast tactical.
Yes. But it was always, I thought it was... like, I thought I was being very clever at the time, because Fast and Dirty would abbreviate to FAD. Like,
yeah.
War game rules always are FADs. They come and go, like, what game is popular. So I thought it was, like, if I, it would sort of, like, preempt, you know. But, yeah, so that's, like, one way of doing the design process is, now, subconsciously, I knew at the time it was always going to be a sci-fi game, because that's just what I played at the time. I was just starting to get into historical gaming. So, but it was all mechanically based. Like, there were mechanical ideas I wanted in order to produce, like, certain effects. The other thing was the morale test, because it's, you roll three dice and compare each die to your morale score. And everyone thought that was copied from Chain Reaction, which is a filthy lie, because I didn't play Chain Reaction until later. It was copied from, like, Vampire the Masquerade, the role-playing game.
Wait, they differ copy.
Yeah, it was still ripping something off. Because I always liked the idea of, like, a dice pool, but I disliked having to count, like, seven or eight dice. So it was just, what if you only had, like, three dice? But it worked the same. You would count how many of them were. So you could, like, pass by zero, one, two, or three dice.
Oh, yeah.
Which is exactly how Chain Reaction works. So I get, like, why. Again, because Chain Reaction was just coming out at the same time. But it took a little bit before I played that. I didn't play it until Nuts came out.
Oh, yeah.
So, so that's kind of, I don't know if you have any, like, clarifying questions covering that.
Before I go into that, I will say hello to Underfluked from the Hobby Homies Discord.
Hey!
He's been catching up with our past episodes while base coding Bratman, the Skavens.
All right, that's a good thing to do.
That's a lot of things to do.
Yeah. Well, glad to have you along. Yes, Fast and Dirty is like the, I guess it's like the OG, because it predates Nordic Weasel Games. It wasn't even like under, it was just had my name on it. So for the people who like remember that, that means you're in like the super exclusive club. Like the 5 Parsecs players, like OG 5 Parsecs, that's still like the next generation.
The people who said that you should play 5 Parsecs though were saying it because he's the guy who did Fast and Dirty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's how old it is. So when the original inspirations have kind of been forgotten again, that's how you could tell it's been a hot minute.
Yeah.
Time moved on, and it became time to try and like do something that could actually be sold, which would be 5 Men in Normandy. And 5 Men in Normandy actually comes out of the same sort of mechanical focus of having a dice mechanic that I wanted to do. And then building a game up around that. And in that case, it was actually a case where the dice mechanic came first, sort of in the abstract. And then what it would be best for was kind of figured out after that. So the idea I was really into at the time. So this is several years later. We're now living in Portland. And we had been playing a lot of Stargrunt still. had been playing a lot of Nuts in 5150. Once we figured out how it actually worked. yeah, I mean, like, a lot. There were multiple people. If for some reason, RPG dudes, like, were really easy to sell on that game. Because everyone I knew, I didn't know anyone who was a wargamer where I lived, but I met a bunch of people who were role players and who were kind of interested, as long as they didn't have to paint nothing. So, and it just worked out, like, playing Nuts and playing 5150 was, like, those games just really, like, caught people. It was very... I knew I wanted to make something that was like a little bit in that direction. I knew I wanted the, like the campaign structure. This is like the original sin for Nordic Weasel Games. Cause I knew I wanted that. Like it could be played solo if you wanted. But that whole, like you set up the mission and you play, you fight, and then you see what happens to your dude. So kind of like the Necromunda vibe, but I also wanted to be a little more involved in what was kind of out there. Like it's, seems silly now because like every game now comes with like event tables and stuff when you play a campaign, but that wasn't the case. Like for the most part, it wasn't like Necromunda doesn't have them at all, other than there's like the injury table and there's like sometimes things can happen when you send your dudes out for money.
Yep.
like Chain Reaction never really had them. So that was like I knew I wanted some of that stuff. And then for the combat mechanics, I had this idea of, like, for some reason at the time, I was, like, really mad at games with dice modifiers. Because I was, like, I've always had, like, this visceral thing that if you roll, like, a good roll, and then you add up all the shit, and it turns out it's, like, a -1 and you missed. Mm. Like, that sucks ass. So I was very, like, I often get, like, my mind set on, like, a specific thing that I just don't want or do want. This is why, like... In Weasel games, like close combat almost never lasts more than one round because I just don't like when it does that, and therefore it usually doesn't go in the book. Mm-hmm. So I was really keen on the idea of like, what if you just didn't have modifiers? What would you have to do then? I was like, okay, well, in that case, the idea came around, what if you're just rolling the dice and you're counting ones and sixes? Like that's the only thing that matters. I think originally I had thought about a D10, but then it became like, oh, like, if it's like, oh, like eights, nines, and tens are good and ones are bad, like it's less immediate than if it's literally just ones and sixes. Like you just roll your dice and snatch those up and the rest don't matter.
Okay.
That was kind of the idea. And then like, then it followed like, okay, well, the sixes are the more serious result, the ones are the less serious. Like if you shoot at somebody, ones means he's wounded, sixes means he's dead. If it's a morale die, then sixes means he's broken, ones means he like hits the dirt. And then it all kind of got built out from that. So again, it was kind of a dice mechanic. But then after we had the dice mechanic, it was kind of looking at like, okay, what does this actually like work for? And it turned out that, well, it works for something where there's a high chance of like you going to ground, hitting the dirt, so on. Maybe you're wounded, maybe not. But somebody has to like go figure it out. And it doesn't work very well for guys wearing armor. So World War II kind of came up as like the logical... you know, the thing. And then it became 5 Men Normandy. And then once that decision was in place, then everything else. It's like this like ladder. You start with like one thing, like the dice. And they inform like, okay, there's certain types of game that'll now work and there's certain ones that won't. And then from there, okay, if we're doing World War II, now you can start pinning it down. Like, okay, well, in that case, because it's a skirmish game, maybe it's only a squad. And if it's only a squad, you probably don't need tanks. And so, like, each decision you take, you more and more options get, like, chiseled away until you have, like, this very clear, hopefully, this very clear box in the end with stuff that can go in it. And once you kind of have that box of those, like, limitations to it, then there's a bunch of stuff you just don't have to worry. You know, you don't have to worry about, like, artillery rules because it's only, like, a squad. If they get shelled by, like, 105-millimeter howitzers, pack up your dudes and put them back in a box. They're all dead. You know, or it landed off table and they're fine.
But I got a question. And first I say, hello, Mini Warmuts. How you doing? See you? Are you ready to write a game? If not, keep listening. And the other thing is, how immutable would you say then your, like, maybe your boxed core concept would be?
Well, it turns out, this is spoilers for, like, the next time we do this, because it turns out that it is both hard to work with, but also kind of mutable if you need it to. So this is one of those things where you can luck into things a little bit. Sometimes designers get everything to line up perfectly because they're highly intelligent and can predict, you know, Sherlock Holmes style. If I do this, then seven iterations later. And other times it's just blind luck. Because it turned out that because the rules were very abstract, like if a dude is down, that could mean a bunch of things. All it means in the rules is that he's not doing anything until you roll to recover. But it doesn't, like, if he's just like taking a breather or if he got wounded or if it bounced off his helmet or something, like, it doesn't matter. He's just down. And that meant that, okay, well, in that case, that could also apply to, like, a squad of guys. They could be down. Like, the squad is not acting right now. It doesn't mean they're all, like, wounded. It just means that something is going on and they're not really responding right now. And if that works, then that works for a tank or a space alien. So sometimes you can kind of luck into that the box can actually do a bunch of other things. Sometimes it doesn't. You have to force it a little bit. I think we've all had the experience of playing a game that was, like, very clearly, like, a different version of another system, and it only worked really well for the original system. Like, a lot of times you'll see, like, people who are talking about it, even with, like, Mortheim, you can sometimes run into people who will say, like, oh, yeah, those rules were great for Mortheim, but they didn't, they were too complicated for, like, one, like, rank and flank, or the other way around. So sometimes you can almost always adapt things a little, but there's, like, a limit to how far you can adapt it sometimes. You know, if your game is, like, really detailed, then it's difficult to scale it up. If you make a game that's, like, very abstract, it'll scale up very well, but maybe it doesn't scale down all that well. Because it's just too abstract. You need a little detail, a little crunch in there. So is that kind of what you're going for?
Yeah, basically. I like your thoughts. Have never played Stargrave, but when I think about the shooting system from, like, Frostgrave or Range of Shadow Deep, the opposed D20 rolls, I often wonder how that would feel in a shooting game, you know, where shooting is the focus. Because it seems a lot more, I mean, I love the diversity of the D20 opposed rolls for close combat, because it gives you a chance. Like, I'm going in there, but I might die.
And it has that vibe of, like, oh, my dude, like, parried and he got one. Like, because you both get to roll. Yeah, this is just, like, a vibes thing, but I never feel, like, real happy. I played a couple of games that had opposed rolls when shooting, and it always, like, doesn't feel that great. It feels weird. Like, to me, if you're rolling to defend, that's like you're actively defending. So if I'm like parrying your dude, or if it's a game where we're just both rolling and we're comparing. So it's like an active thing. But for me, like, shooting is like you're in a position, like you're in cover or you're lying down or whatever. And now it's a task for my dude to try and hit you. So I don't know. I've never played, like, ironically, Stargrun did have, because you roll for, like, your cover and range. I think, All Tomorrow's War had kind of the same, but it always, like, feels kind of weird to me. I think you can also run into, and this is maybe why it works really well in Frostgrave, because when it's, like, two dudes with swords, you kind of want it to be, like, you want your dudes to matter, but you also want it to be pretty random, because, like, two dudes with swords, anything can happen, right?
Yeah.
Like, your dude comes charging in, but he stepped on a rock, and I jab him, even though my dude is like a drunk peasant and your dude is a cool wizard, right?
Yeah, surprise, surprise, you did.
Yeah. So I think for, like, melee stuff, you kind of, it's okay for it to be quite random, because you want, like, a lot of different outcomes. And you want to have it so, like, you know, the halfling can take on the vampire or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like once in a while. But for shooting, I think that can feel worse. Like if you're like in, if your dudes are like in a ruined building and like poking out and then you roll like the worst for defense, it just feels, to me at least, it just feels kind of bad.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'll admit I have not actually played Stargrave, so I don't actually know how it works.
Yeah. You have shooting in Frostgrave and just Shadowdeep, so yeah. I always imagine it works kind of like that, but I don't actually know.
Yeah. I think it works better for hand-to-hand, but I'll be curious in the comments afterwards if there's people who do like the opposed role and they prefer that, even for shooting. Leave us a comment if that's your vibe. I guess there's probably some other... there's some games where it's almost not like... I'm trying to think of one now. That where it's not like a modifier, but it's also not an opposed roll, but I'm drawing a blank right now. I guess in battles, like you just kind of roll and hit dudes. It's just based on range.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Yeah, because battles, like your defense is just like how many like dots you have to cross off. So
checking those dots.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like if you're moving and stuff, there's modifiers for that, so you do have a little. Well, that's true. Like, so it's more like you choose to do something, and then that affects the attacker's role. So I don't know. I guess that's kind of the same.
Yeah, modifiers in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Cover, speed.
Yeah. So both of those were kind of just coming out of like mechanical concerns, ideas. But like I mentioned at the start, that's only like one of the, two or three ways to start with a game. You don't have to start with the mechanics. And therefore, I think that some people, maybe it's just like how you think about stuff. Because like I always find like dice mechanics and game mechanics really. But if you're like a vibes person, like you know that you want to make like a cool, grimdark, like sci-fi game, because there's not enough of those on the market.
No.
Then you want to start with the vibe and you want to like, because then you're making mechanics that has to fit your vibe as opposed to doing the other way around, making some cool mechanics and then seeing what vibe they fit. So like maybe you want something where like characters can be wounded so you can like track how much agony they're in or something.
Oh, yes.
Or, you know, you want to have like critical hits so that dude can like ultra die and that affects morale checks or something.
Like. Oh, there's a game that has horrific death that affects morale.
Yeah.
I think it's the Turn Up or Sludge. I don't remember which
one. I was going to say, I think one of those two has some sort of like you can like mega die and it like
horrifies everyone.
I've seen some old game where like casualties were left on the table and then units near them would have morale penalties, even the other side. So if you like kill a bunch of dudes, but then you ran your dudes into where they were standing, they're just like standing in, you know, blood and guts.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was though. Yeah. It's like, so you have to kind of like, it's vibes. But if you're starting with that, you have like, or if you have like a very strong idea of like, you know, that you want to do rank and flank, like, medieval gaming, you want it to feel like a certain movie or something, or a certain book, you can start with those. And the process is kind of the same. It's, again, you kind of like climb the ladder for each thing you decide for sure. That means you have now decided not to do a bunch of other things.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you know that you're just focusing on like black powder stuff, then you can ignore like a bunch of stuff about like armor. You don't need rules for armor, dude, for the most part. Or, you know, so every decision like narrows down like the number of choices and the decisions you can make. Yes, Lancelot. Oh my god.
Cat time.
Yes. Well, he's mad because it's an hour past his lunchtime.
Oh no.
And we are out of kitty food until it arrives in the mail. But that's another hour. So he's like going back and forth between me up here and my wife downstairs who's at work. So he'll come in and meow angrily, and then he'll wander off to the other person who would just go back and forth. Like the kid had to close his door so he wouldn't circle in there.
Everyone needs to know how displeased I am with this system.
Yes. Well, and he doesn't want to eat his dry fruits. He's not that desperate. So that's kind of like, those two were like the start, both of like proper tabletop design, but also the start like Nordic Weasel games. There was actually two other titles sort of around there, but I think we'll save those for a different episode, which is Trenchstorm, which was actually published by a real company who don't exist anymore, the Tin Dictator. And then a very early game called Strife that I did, which I think was distributed to like 20 people globally.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah, that was a big deal. But it was all like by personal email, right? But it was mostly a game that I played like just with my friends. But we did play it and we made like army lists and stuff. So maybe that would be worth talking about. But that will be for a different episode, I think, because we are kind of working on a schedule today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
But
no time for Strife.
Nope. It's got to be harmonious and committed. However, Normandy then ends up being kind of the jump off point to like some new thing, because that's where the original OG 5 parsecs, if you have been around long enough for the blue cover, that's
where the oldest bat reps on YouTube were of the original 5 parsecs from home.
Yeah. There's some OG stuff. And yeah, then the generic 5 core rules and no end in sight. So that might be one of those two will be like the next episode we do of it, where we do this. This will be kind of, I think, a feature every like 3 or 4 episodes. So.
Yeah, I think it wakes up or it makes sense.
So, and of course, if people have who are listening or who are doing stuff, if you have specific things you would like us to talk about, if you want to have a deep breakdown of how KPS came about or why on earth nobody plays Unity Field Agent, just leave us some comments. As proven by this episode, we take requests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now we don't want people to get all carried away, so we'll probably like never honor a request ever again, just to leave you like, you know, you gotta beg a little bit.
Yeah, well, we'll let them build up, and then when they get to the top, then we'll grab one from the middle and
yeah
keep them waiting again. So Mitty Warmutt was just saying finally received his Borderlands book. Very cool.
Hey.
And he's getting into solo RPGs lately. 4 Against Darkness.
All right.
The most That's brutal like... game I played in my life.
that game was like really tough. Yeah. I was like, I have like a short anecdote for that, because I bought it and I was like really fired up to play it. And then I played it with a kid and he was like, no, this is stupid. I don't want to play this. And I was like,
stomped.
Yeah, well, it was like too simple, so he didn't play it. Yeah, it's funny. So I never ended up playing it that much, but then like I didn't pay attention for a little bit, and then when I checked into it again, there was like 30 books and stuff, and it was like an empire.
Yeah, it's so amazing.
It's cool. Like a lot
it's even got like adult content games.
Yeah, I saw some of them had like little
spicy.
Yeah, stickers on them. I guess you could fight like titty demons or something.
Yeah, something like that.
But it kind of fits that vibe of like, I think a lot of people are like really into that. You can just like sit with like a stack of paper and a pencil and your iPad or a print of the book or whatever. And you can just like roll dice and kind of like have an adventure, but it doesn't involve a whole bunch of stuff and it's just on your own. Like, I think that's like a really.
Oh, I know the next meal ticket.
Oh, yeah? You got
to figure out a way to tie in your games with the people's AI girlfriends.
Yeah, well,
that's the big thing.
Yeah, then she might end up like reinterpreting the rules. I was doing a test the other day because talking to somebody about like using because there was some story about somebody who got like in a fight with their D&D group or something because they asked like ChatGPT about the rules in D&D, but it got the rules wrong.
Oh yes.
And they were all like arguing, so I tried asking like how like a rule works in like Advanced Squad Leader. This is for Gemini, the Google one. But it was funny because it like kind of explained the rule pretty well, except like 2 errors that you would only catch if you like knew the rules pretty well.
Oh yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, this is like very accurate, especially for like a copywritten book, but that's neither here nor there. There's probably enough tutorials that it's out there. But it was just like, if I didn't like kind of know what was happening, it would sound pretty okay, but then it would do that typical AI thing where suddenly gets like weird and vague, because it would talk about like the rallying phase always comes after the rout phase, which is not like, that's not how the turn works.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, I always thought it would be funny to but it's like not there yet, because thought, oh, what if you like asked AI to like write you a rule, a game, and then you sat down and tried to play it like exactly as it was written, but it kind of doesn't work, like, because it's often like very vague and abstract. Like, it'll be like, well, if you're needing morale checks in a game, then you could do it like this, and then maybe they run away or suffer a penalty. But that's not like how a game works. That's just like a dude telling you.
Or even if you got it to figure out the rules, it'll forget.
Yeah.
So it'll make up new rules as it goes along. It's like, come on, just have some consistency.
Yeah. The problem is that it's, there's no way of like, it's very difficult to like force it to be like on target. I did spend like an afternoon trying to bully it into accepting that Oregon is spelled with a K, and it was like refusing to do it. Oh. Yeah, it would not. And it was kind of funny because it was kind of like it's easy to like apply emotions to like the chatbot, right?
Okay, yeah.
Because I would ask it like, what is the list of like states on the North American West Coast? And it would list, including, and I would say like Oregon with a K, and it would list them all, but spell it right. And then I would say, I didn't ask for Oregon with a G, I asked for Oregon with a K. And like, well, if that was a state, then it would be on the West Coast, but it's not. So it's very kind of
sassy.
Yeah, it was getting kind of snippy. Then finally, it just started ignoring me. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I'm not going to play your stupid game.
Come on.
Yeah. Warmoder said, check out Alone Against Fear. It's a horror solo RPG. He's going to play it for Halloween. That sounds pretty fun, actually.
Yeah. Now, if only AI girlfriends could play it with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Living the good life. Maybe if your AI girlfriend could play ASL, then you know technology is there.
Yeah, yeah. You might need like a spooky, like goth AI girlfriend. I'm sure that's an option. Yeah, there was one book I saw, and it was like, you might remember it because it was a couple years ago, and I know we talked about it on the Discord. It was like a horror minis game, but it was also like a choose your own adventure book. So you would like make choices and like go to paragraph or section 14, and then some of those results would have like a tabletop battle. I don't remember what it was called though, and it seemed to kind of come and go, and nobody remembers.
That sounds like a Jason thing to me.
It might have been. I don't remember.
Well, if Jason ever pops up, he should tell us.
Yeah, I don't think it was him, but it was cool. It was one of those things that's like, oh, that's such a great idea, and then nobody else did it again.
I imagine it's a huge amount of work.
Yeah, even I remember as a kid, I tried to make my own little like fighting fantasy like stories with like even just not doing like 100 paragraphs. Is like a ton of work because you have to like map them all out and you will 100% like screw it up. I'm sure they're asked for it because it's like if you like you take the magic potion and that go to paragraph 35. Well, now you can't use 35 for anything else.
Yeah,
but you also have to make sure that like 35 like leads back to where you're supposed to be and you don't like skip a room or something. And you have to make sure the choices like are rational. Like I remember when we played Lone Wolf on the Discord many years ago, I think even before COVID. And like book two has this thing where there's like a specific item you start with and be stolen from you. And if you lose the item, you cannot complete the book. And you find like the dude who stole it in a bar. And if you go to talk to the bartender first, you now lose the ability to get the item back. Even though it's like the most logical option. So yeah, it's a ton of work to do those, but it is very cool. The other thing is you can't make it like too simple because if it's only like 10 paragraphs, people can figure it out immediately just by looking at it. Like, so it is something I would love to do. I would love to do like a Lone Wolf book or something, maybe like set in unified space. Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can talk the overlords into that.
Well, I think a good AI engine could actually help with that. Like I've heard that people use the AI engines to like load up their lore and then reference it back. If they forget how
Are ways to like train it on specific texts and stuff and then it'll work within that like there are ways to, like I've messed with it a little bit where I would ask it for like scenario ideas for like RPGs. Some of them are like not bad. You could probably do the same for like war game scenarios. Now like it's also like you know, like coming up with a scenario idea is not something that's like difficult for me. So that doesn't help, but it's like cool that it exists, you know, if you're just like sitting and you're not really sure, or if you want to be surprised because it's something you didn't come up with yourself. Like if you're solo gaming, that's like way, like I see a lot of people who talk about, they'll use like ChatGPT or whatever to like, they'll describe like the basic situation and then it'll have the AI like come up with extra stuff. Cause then it's not things you created, and that makes it, you get a little bit of a surprise or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I usually play with it when I'm bored, like camping or on a trip.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's fun just to, like, mess around with it, see if you can just say, like, absurd things. I see on online, like, people, like, argue with the AI or whatever. It's like, you know, pointless. It's not real, right? Like, it's just...
You are just arguing with the internet.
Yeah, I mean, you could go on Reddit and argue with people, see some... I saw earlier today somebody who got, like, in a fury. There was, like, 100 post, like, argument. It seemed like one person who said that a story has to be things that aren't real. Like, if it's something that actually happened, then it's not a story. And then, like, everyone was having it out, like, a knife point over that. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, man. But you guys certainly had a go at it.
Mini Mortimer saying he's going to add a hex crawl when he plays Borderlands.
Yeah, so I'll admit, I'll say this here so that everyone can, like, forget about it later. But the reason that there aren't hex crawls in, even though it's such an obvious thing to have, is that at the time, I was really sick of, like, how every OSR RPG thing was getting a hex crawl. So I specifically did not want to do hexes. However, I've gotten over that, and at some point, there would probably be, like, a hex crawl for something. Where it would fit, like, an exploration kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, that's the reason there's no hexes.
Yeah. And F7453 can confirm the existence of goth AI girlfriends. Don't ask. Right. I assume that F7453 is a goth girlfriend AI.
That could be. That would be why they know that they exist.
But we're not asking, so don't worry.
Yeah, that would be rude.
Yes. Okay, we had a pretty good tangent there.
The goth AI girlfriend sort of left the room, like, deflated a little bit. Like, where can you where can you go from there?
Yeah.
You know. But you have to be careful with that, because maybe she wants your bitcoins.
Oh, yeah. Could want bitcoins.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Did we have anything left?
No, that was kind of the gist of it. I guess it was, we'll have to have our... highly devoted fan, like, pipe in this and let us know, or anyone else in the comments, really, if for this kind of episode, where it's like a retrospective of a game, is that, like, what you want? Do you want, like, mostly the design aspects of it? Do you want, like, maybe for the next time we talk about, we can then talk a little bit about, like, what happens after you've released a game and kind of, like, interacting with people and responses and stuff. So let us know. Was this... is this something you're interested in getting more of? And if you are, was this the format for it? Would you like it to be more like questions and answers? Or would you like it to be more like something else?
Yeah. Mini Warbot does have, well, it's not a question.
Hey.
A couple exclamation points, but does lead me to a question. So he said, dude, I will get your dungeon scum, and I see you have some generators too. So as a tangent off the top of your head, which Nordic Weasel titles do you think would play nicely with other ones? So I see that Mini Warmut wants to use some Dungeon Scum to generate some content for Five Leagues from Borderlands, most likely.
Yeah, and a lot of people have mixed up, like, Starport Scum and 5 Parsecs for that kind of thing. Especially if you want to, like, step outside of just the strict miniature thing and you want to, like, add a little more to it. Like, Starport Scum has a lot of, like, kind of RPG tools that you can use, like, flesh in some of those things. Like, if you're doing fantasy stuff, the Usurper RPG has, like, a ton of random generation, city generation, generating, like, dungeon parameters and stuff, character events. And they are very, partially because some of them were created independently, not as part of that game. So they're very easy to adapt. So if you want to fill in, like, a community or fill in a character background or something, Usurper will do a really easy job with that. Mm-hmm. And most of those systems are very, like, standalone. You just pick out one to use here and there. I suspect more people have bought it for that than have just actually sat down and played the game.
And if you want spicy romance outside of your chat girlfriend, your AI goth girlfriend, you can always pick up Weasel Tech.
Absolutely. And you can get the AI to detail what does happen in between things. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I've gotten exactly one email from a guy who was playing that game. He was like, but I never... He wrote me. He was like, I never decided if my characters were gay or not. So I was like, well, now's the time to figure it out, man.
Everyone's figuring it out all at once.
Yeah. Maybe
Ask ChatGPT. Maybe they know. They explain the situation.
Yeah. Maybe in the future, that's not even a thing. Like, there's just like one gender and they don't even understand what that means. Like, they don't have to be humans. They could be like aliens.
Could be anything.
You know, probably. Like the dudes in Macross are humans, but I don't even know. Are the dudes in like Gundam, are they humans? Or are they like not from Earth?
There's almost never aliens in Gundam.
Yeah. But like, if they are like alien humans, you know, or if they are actually like from Earth, I don't remember. It's been
there's the new types. New types are just better people. They
like space. Right.
Now they're better.
Mini Warmut asked, does your server include mostly older generators? It includes a lot of stuff that was on an old blog I had done. But yeah, if you want like a collection of generators for like fantasy stuff, your server has a whole boatload of them. There's a lot of like random event tables, including like domain level and like character level. There's a bunch of stuff for generating like not room by room dungeons, but like dungeon like conditions. There's a random monster generator. There's a bunch of stuff in there. So if you're looking for like that kind of randomly rolled fantasy content, your server is like that's where you should go. Yeah. More so than Dungeon Scum, I would say. Dungeon Scum is a little more limited because it was more aimed at like being game mastered.
Game mastering.
Yeah.
So
you may have to look on DriveThruRPG for that. I don't remember if it's cross posted to Wargame Vault. I tried to take it very seriously with which games go where, but then I see like Vampire the Masquerade gets posted to Wargame Vault. It's like, oh, fuck. Why am I caring? I know they actually tried to like cut it down. The problem is that because RPG books sell like 10 times as much, so they will just automatically drown out like all of the top seller lists if they are allowed to cross post to Wargame Vault.
If I have to buy a war game from DriveThruRPG, I feel displeased.
Yeah,
like I don't want to.
No, it feels wrong. Even though now the like ratings are technically the same across both.
Oh, crazy!
So yeah, it is technically the same like behind the scenes, but I actually haven't looked in a while and see if we're still if you've reached the dizzying heights at the top of the like metal chain.
What is Electrum?
The absolute highest is Adamantine, which is like 10 books. We'll play a quick game. One of them is like a 3D print and one is a dungeon set. So there are 7 games that are in the absolute highest category on Wargame Vault. So can you guess what those 7 games might be?
All variations of ASL.
No, actually, these outdo ASL. ASL wow. 5 parsecs of both Mithril. We've made it to the top of the mountain, but there's like one little hill that even the mighty ASL cannot climb.
Dang.
So what is, if you had to guess, what are the best, absolute all-time best-selling minis games on Wargame Vault?
Minis games, huh?
Yep, they are all legitimate. They're minis enough.
Minis enough?
Yeah. Okay, I will give you a hint that one of them is a YouTube game.
A YouTube game?
Yeah.
Oh, probably the Snarling Badger Studios people.
You're going to have to give me titles. I don't remember.
Rain in Hell.
Yes, Rain in Hell is one of them.
Space Station Zero.
Is 2 of them.
Death and Wizards.
No, actually.
Oh,
that one is right under. That's in
the middle. Right.
They're slumming it down with parsecs and ASL.
Yeah.
But there's one more in that kind of vein, although I don't think it was a YouTube game, but it was big with YouTubers.
Okay.
So Space Weirdos is on there.
Oh, Space Weirdos, yeah.
And then it's Rangers, 4 Against Darkness, which is not a minis game, so that's bullshit. And Battletech. Which, I mean...
Just Battletech? Like all?
It's a Total Warfare, specifically.
Oh, Total War. Okay, yeah.
So, which I wonder if... Oh, because, like, I don't even know if you can buy a PDF with just, like, the regular rules. So, that makes sense.
I'm not sure. Yeah, you could get Alpha Strike and stuff, though.
Yeah. Once you get down into the Mithril tier, then you start getting Parsecs, ASL, Sword Weirdos. Maybe it came out later. I don't know. Death Wizards, Grimdark Future... Advanced Alpha Strike sits down there. Grunts is still in there. Oh, Grimdark Future is in the top tier as well. So that's the games that have like sold the most of anything. So once you're down the platinum tier, then you start getting like a lot of stuff.
You once ruled the realms with dice and a sword, painted goblins till tea, Then your minis were stored. You grew up, got a job, bought a flat, wore a tie, swapped dragons for deadlines, your brushes went dry. Now the dishes are done and the kids are in bed. You climb to the attic to raise the undead. Crack open the paints that you swore you'd outgrown. The smell of acrylic, it feels like your home. There's grey in your beard, even more on your head, but you're splashing some colour on plastic and lead. So welcome back, General. What took you so long? Your hobby's still here. It's the place you belong. The Bedroom Battlefields Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Find it at bedroombattlefields.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you had been able to consolidate 5 parsecs through the whole process, though, it might have made it up to adamantium.
That would have popped in another like 2,000 copies or so. That might have... I forget where the tiers are, and I don't see like the exact sales numbers for the Modiphius stuff. But yeah, that could have pushed us up. The original 5-core is down in the like platinum tier, so that's not bad.
No, not bad.
Yeah, that's like in the 3. I forget what the tiers are, but that's like 3,000 or 4,000 copies. So I think the tier is like 2,500 or something. If you want to be a little depressed, you can add up like the percentage of all the categories, and I think it's something like 70% of items like never reach the cobber tier, which I think is 50 copies. So,
oh yeah,
most things you see on Drive-Thru or Wargame Vault fail to reach 50 copies. Now it might not be your goal to sell 50 copies. In that case, who gives a shit? Like maybe you just wanted to do it and say you did it, or you wanted it to be like available for your friends or something. That's fine. Like you don't have to be in it to make money. But if you are in to make money, just like you gotta like, just stand out a little bit.
Next month's episode, how to be okay with a copper seller.
Yeah, actually, maybe we should do like a business episode. Just a
business. Yeah.
Sometimes people are curious about that kind of stuff. We can kind of talk about when is it worth selling out. I was preparing something last night. I was like, you know what? I need a game that's a little bit of a cash grab, but which also has some soul.
Yeah. Many more months requesting physical books. People love physical books.
Yeah. So the problem is when you're doing it indie, it has to be done like POD, basically, and
it's a whole new process.
Yeah, well, for one, the prices are going up because everything is going up, and two, the problem you run into is that when it's something that you are planning on like doing updates to or corrections or something, it's difficult to like commit to a time when like you're gonna do like a print version. So it's something I keep like looking at, but it's just, it's a little tricky. Also, things that are laid out for like Scream and laid out for print are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you ever want to listen to more of that process, I would recommend the Snarlcast, which is done by Snarling Badger Studios.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about, you know, just how different it is to actually make a physical copy versus just putting out your PDF. And so that's very interesting.
Yeah, it's like a whole another level of considerations. Yeah. And a lot of those are far easier if you account for them in advance than if you do your thing and then have to account for it backwards.
Yeah.
Like
even
things like art selection can differ depending on what you're doing. So, but yeah, I do hear it. It's just a little difficult right now.
If what you're doing is both working and taking up most of your time, then, you know, this new thing is not so easy.
Yeah. Well, there's also the like perpetual problem of like you can have a wide range of like how busy you are when you're one dude or now like 1.5 dude. But like you reach a point where you're kind of like all accounted for. Like one of the things I want to do for years is being able to work with people to help them get published and, you know, take a little cut from helping them like lay out and get going and stuff like that. The problem is that doing all that work is almost as time consuming as if you're just writing the game yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
From the start. So you get to this point where like you have a lot of freedom and agility, as the corporates would say, if you're a one-man outfit, but you also have like very clear limitations. It's the same reason that like not as much anymore, I guess it's passable now, but like people will sometimes complain that like the layout isn't fantastic for the indie stuff. I'm like, yeah, it isn't, because I paid $0 to have it done. I did it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I can get it usable, that is fine. And that's what you get for that. If I have to pay like $500 to get a 100-page rulebook laid out, the rulebook is going to cost more if I'm only selling like 100 copies of it.
Mm-hmm. You know? And in perspective, like Uncle Adam and Vince Ventrella, Snarling Badger Studios, spend a whole year on one game.
Well, that's the other thing.
It's 1 year, one game.
Right. So you have to account as well. Like, now I don't know the number of copies they have exactly sold, like Rain and Hell. It obviously sold like fantastically well. It popped up everywhere, right? But you also have to look at, are you spending a year to do that and sell that? And then you get X number of sales, right? For each week you have spent on work on that game, you get whatever, 10 sales. Versus a game that has a quicker turnaround. And again, it also depends if you're working full time, if you're working on the side, whatever. Like, I'm not saying any specific thing. But, you know, could you make three games in the same amount of time and they each sell a third? Like, those two are identical in terms of, like, what you got back out of it.
Mm-hmm. You know, and if it's not like, your passion to begin with, like, Uncle Adam's passion is layout. He went to school for layout. He loves layout. That's what he wants to do.
So there may be a specific part of that that you, like, for him, and I don't know if he laid out that book himself. He very well might have. But if he did, you know, then that's great because that's the thing he can do. But if you have, like, no ability whatsoever to, like, do that, then either you have to learn and do it poorly or do it good enough, or you have to pay somebody to do it. And none of that comes cheap.
No.
So it's the same with art. Like, people, you know, like, everyone agrees that, like, the 5 Parsecs, 5 Leagues looks gorgeous. But, like, I also have the receipt somewhere for what that art cost. And
framed on the wall.
Yeah. That shit is expensive. You can sometimes get friendship prizes. You can, like, you can get somebody, you know, you find somebody who lives in, like, Indonesia or something, and you can pay them what is a good wage for them, and you can get some nice art. Or you can find somebody who's willing to, like, work for pretty cheap, but, like, it's not going to be that cheap. If you're going on Fiverr for, like, your game art, it's going to look like shit.
Mm-hmm.
Can learn to draw yourself.
Yeah.
Like, get Procreate and an iPad, and you can make stuff yourself too. Like, I've always wanted to do, like, a game that was, like, just one person, like, pencil drawing or pencil sketching the whole thing. Like, it's kind of like a old school, like, homebrew thing. But yeah, like, all of those things come with costs. And there's the added thing on top of that, that, okay, so I go get all the art and I pay a dude to lay it all out professionally and it looks gorgeous and beautiful. Well, guess what? Like, half a year later, it turns out that, like, the way that morale worked was kind of bad and people come up with a much cooler option and we want to put that in the book. But guess what? I can't work with those files. I don't know how to do it. And the dude who did it back then has moved to Paraguay and is not reachable anymore. And you may or may not, like, have the files, whatever. Like, there's just 10,000 different things that stack up really, really quickly. And I've always tried to strike this balance between being really, really risk averse and also being able to take chances on things. But I prefer to take chances on things that doesn't cost, like, $500 or $1,000 out of pocket.
Yes.
So, which, again, like, some people are, you know, like, you look at, like, Black Oath Games, and the stuff he does is fucking gorgeous, but he is also required to, like, kickstart all of that stuff, because otherwise you're putting out, like, you know, $3,000 for all that beautiful full-color art, like, out of pocket up front. You know, that's not viable if you are working for a living, right? Yeah. And you don't have, like, a corporate-like budget. But yeah, so that was a little bit of a rant. There's a lot more in that. I could talk forever about that. I think a lot of people might have one episode like that, so we'll get there. But I think clock might also be running out because you have to go do a
thing. Yeah, I'll have to wrap up things soon, pick up my kid from her first day of school. Hey. My daughter's art is exponentially getting better. Faster. Hey. It's really accelerating. School too. So, you know.
Does she really have, like, the book for it? Like, she wants to
maybe she'll be my little art generator.
Ooh. Yeah, that's the big bucks. Get her into doing, like, furry art. That's where all the money is.
Yeah.
Well, with kids, too, it's like, because there's, like, they do it because they like it. And then there's, like, some kids who, like, consciously want to, like, get better and improve. And, like, those are both cool. But, you know, sometimes it's, like, you want to let them just, like, be kids and have fun and do stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But you also want to encourage them. Like, if they really do want to improve, maybe, you know, have you gotten her, like, books on, like, drawing or stuff? Or I don't know if kids read books anymore.
I don't know either. They just watch videos. So
Yeah. There's probably, some dude on YouTube just, you know, explaining all of it, like, on composition and stuff.
Right now she's playing with a program called Flip-A-Clip. So it's animation. But she's not using it for animation yet. She's using it to just draw different like layers, okay. And then she'll layer them all together and stuff. So I just want to let her keep exploring, see where she goes.
Yeah. Does he have, what does he draw on?
Tablet.
Like iPad or Android?
Chromebook.
Oh, okay.
Like a stylus on it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to say, if she had an iPad, I would recommend getting her a copy of Procreate, because it's not that expensive, and it's like, it scales from, like, you can pick it up really easy, but it's really scales up to, like, professional level, too. Like, so it's, like, super, super flexible.
Nice. Yeah, well, I think she'll be using the iPads more this year as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think their school uses iPads more than Chromebooks, so.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And at the end of the year, they usually sell off the old ones, so maybe we'll grab one
and
see.
And you can get, like, the little pencil, which is, like, made of space matching. Those things are so cool.
Yeah. She's super stubborn about, like, replacing technology, though. She still wants to use, like, the oldest tablet she has. She's like, I don't want a new tablet. I just want to keep using this till it's dead. And she complains. It's like, it's dying. I don't know how it lasted 8 years, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you really like how it works. I always run, like, computers, like, into the ground, basically.
Yeah. But a computer's not a tablet. Tablets were never meant to do 8 years.
Oh,
it's making us suffer at this point. So before we take off, I'm going to just catch up with the last little bit of chat.
Yeah.
Underflute is happy to hear your thoughts. I'm going to be a special patron for Anywhere Mutt's 5x6 campaign, so that's going to be pretty awesome.
Oh, you'll be like the nasty patron.
Yeah. Well, it turns into a rival if we fail the job. So don't F up, man.
Yeah.
And Alpha Wolf is a pure blind who is thankful for fielding our questions, missed the stream, should be at work, going to catch the rerun, no doubt.
Yeah, check out the rerun and let us know, either message Dave or let us know in the comments if this was what you were hoping for. And if not, like what you were kind of hoping to get out of it, because then we'll do another one and later and we'll adjust a little bit to what people are hoping to hear.
And I'm really super behind on getting all the audio done for the podcast and handing it over to Matthew. So I'll try to get to work on that. And maybe Pure Blind will even get to listen to on his preferred podcast and medium.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about customer choice, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And for all the money these guys are paying for this content, I feel we deserve to give them only the best.
Only the best. That's right. All right. Shall we heart out?
Heart out.
Bye. Oof.
Bye.
This episode of Bad Internet Friends was streamed live on YouTube and Twitch. There is a North American-friendly live stream every second Wednesday of the month and a European-friendly live stream every fourth Monday of the month.